Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with Big Frida, author of Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva, and Gay Lenhart, editor of Shaking Up Prohibition in New Orleans, authentic vintage cocktails from A to Z. It's a great pleasure to welcome my guest today, Big Frida, whose new book, written with Nicole Ballin, is Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva. Every New Orleanian knows that Big Frida has put Sissy Bounce on the map. She's the star of the reality show Big Frida, Queen of Bounce, and holds the Guinness World Record for most people twerking simultaneously. And now, add author to that resume. So, Big Frida, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, what made you decide the time was right for the book?
Well, actually, you know, we have been talking about it for a while. And then the agency group that I'm with, you know, they have a publishing company inside of the agency group. And they decided that, you know, they wanted to link up with me and put out a book. And everything just happens for a reason. You know, I can't really put my finger on the timing, but, you know, God does everything for a reason and perfect timing for when things need to happen.
Yeah.
You know, especially what's happening and going on in the world today, this story definitely will be able to help a lot of people and, you know, hope guide some people on their journey.
So you wrote this with your longtime publicist, Nicole Ballin, and that must have been a great pleasure to work with someone who knows you so well, someone you can trust. So what was that process like?
It was very easy, but being that we had been working together for so many years and she knew my backstory and she was there for most of the things that was going on, you know, throughout my career, it was exciting to write the book with her because she kind of knew some of the stuff as it was happening already. So some of the detailed things she already knew and was able to deliver without me having to be there for the whole process.
But your voice comes through loud and clear in
almost
this book.
Definitely.
It really does.
I had to take out some time and really dig in and put down the words and make it my story because it is my story. And I just had to really just focus and put it all on paper.
Now, of course, you're a big celebrity. A lot of people are going to buy this because they like to read celebrity autobiographies. But it's also a really moving story of what it means to grow up in New Orleans and be gay and be African American and that journey of, you know, finding your place in the world. So it must have been an emotional experience to go back to the beginning.
It was, you know, and we really went back,
yeah,
visiting all my old neighborhoods, taking Nicole to like my high school, my middle school, showing her all parts of New Orleans. So, you know, she can feel the story. And when, as she's writing it with me, we can really deliver and she can get it the full understanding of how I grew up, show her the old houses and my old church and, you know, just the whole backstory of where it comes from. So it was definitely a emotional process going back through all of that as growing up as a kid.
Now, like so many young musicians, you found music in the church.
Most definitely.
And we all owe a debt of gratitude to Georgia, the choir director, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, we do. That's my godmother, and she is so talented, and she's so blessed to have helped train so many of the kids at the church, and we're all doing something positive. And like I say, God puts certain people in your life for a reason, and Georgia definitely was put in my life for a reason, and she held me and had my back for many of things.
Well, I loved it when she told you you were tone deaf.
Yes.
Nobody would have thought that, huh?
No.
But it was a surmountable problem.
Yes, definitely was.
Oh, man. Now, like so many New Orleanians, your life has been touched by violence and you've faced a lot of the problems that people do in this city. So were those parts especially hard for you to write?
It was. It brought me back to a very emotional part in my life that, mm-hmm. you know, especially when I was shot. And I just never want to bring that feeling back up, you know, because I almost lost my life and it was a life or death situation. So as I was writing that process, it definitely brought back some feelings. And, you know, I always have the bullet to remind me as well mm-hmm. in my arm. So it was definitely emotional going back to that, especially.
Yeah. But it's a great lesson to young people reading this book.
It is. You just have to be careful. You know, you can't be caught in the wrong place at the wrong time. Be mindful of all your surroundings. And, you know, sometimes we're young and we're out and we want to have fun. But, you know, you just have to be mindful of everything that's happening around you because things can happen so quickly. And it's easy to get in trouble, but it's so hard to get out.
Yeah. Now, another thing that runs through this book so sweetly all the way is this love you have for your family and your mother and just taking care of the people around you that you feel this is a huge responsibility you have.
Well, it definitely is a lot of weight on my shoulders. You know, my family depend on me. The whole process of going through what I went through with my mom had made me very strong. And my process of trying to deal with that and cope with that every day, it just was a journey, and my family was the support that held me up between my family, my lover, and all of my tons of fans that every time I saw someone, it just poured out nothing but tons of love. And that helped me a whole lot in my process of losing my mother.
Mm-hmm. And I love that documentary of you that has your mother because she is such a sweet, sweet
presence. Was so real.
And she was always your rock, telling you to go be yourself. And
always, since a kid, like pushing me out there, get back out there. Don't let nobody push you around. Stand up, be a man, be strong, and be confident in who you are. If you're going to be gay, be the best gay person that you can be. And mm-hmm. she always just pushed me, and kept me into positive things so that I wouldn't be in the street doing the wrong things or doing negative stuff. She always kept me in church, dropping me off at Sunday school, you know,
music lessons,
yeah. piano lessons, everything. She's just like, stay focused and you're gonna be okay.
Yep. Acceptance and pushing you along a little bit all
yes,
at the same time.
All at the same
time.
Now,
this is not a Katrina book, and I don't want to give anybody that impression, but you have a really important chapter about your experience in Katrina. And I wonder if you'd share a little bit of that.
Well,
because it's the 10th anniversary. We're all thinking about it.
Katrina was something that definitely changed my life forever. It was a situation that I had to go through with my family that pulled our bond even closer and let us know how strong our love is. And we went from having all type of material things to having nothing. And it just showed us a life learned lesson that no matter how much you have or how much money you have, it all can be stripped away from you in a blink of an eye. And it taught me values of just about all of the different disasters that happen around the world. You know, most mm-hmm. time people look at it on TV and they take it for granted and not really knowing what those people went through. But when I experienced Katrina, every disaster around the world started being closer to my heart because I had went through something that I felt people around the world went through something. You know, it may have been different situations, but it really touched me and changed me forever that don't take anything for granted. Life happened so quickly, and our story was really scary. You know, the tree hit the house. It knocked off half of the roof, knocked off some of the columns of the house, smashed all three of our cars at the same time, sleeping on the bridge.
Yeah.
It was just really rough, and it's something that I'll never forget as long as I'm living.
Yeah. Every New Orleanian who reads that chapter is going to go, yeah, I know what that's like. It's mm-hmm. really one of the scariest times we all went through together.
Yeah, most definitely. Know? It was scary for the whole city. And I'm very proud, though, that we have bounced back and we're coming back even stronger.
Now, you take it as a great point of pride that you represent New Orleans. You love New Orleans, don't you?
Oh, most definitely. You know, even with so many things that's happening in today's society, especially here in New Orleans with all of the killings, you know, the nonsense violence, I still represent the home front because we do have a lot of positive here. They're always focusing on the negative, but we do have a lot of positive things that happens here, and I'm one of the people that represent the positive. So I have to keep pushing and having New Orleans on that title.
Yep, absolutely. So what's it like for you to look back on all this and know that you've changed music? You've single-handedly changed music and brought your own style to something.
I'm very grateful and I'm very humble that my talent has been allowed to be open up to the world and that I get a chance to be a voice and be an artist and be myself. And I'm just very grateful and very thankful to all of my fans and to God for just putting me in the place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are moments in this book where people come up to you and they recognize you and they know your music and they say your music is known around the world and you had no idea.
No idea at all.
So now you do.
Huh? I do. I have traveled so many places and picked up so many tons of fans. And it's just a blessing when you have so many supporters and people who support your music mm-hmm. and what you do.
Well, say you're a young gay man reading this book. What do you want those readers to take away from your story?
I want them to be inspired to just be themselves, be free. Everyone has a story, and your story is your life. And I just want people to, you know, at the end of the day, this is just all me, being myself, growing, experiencing things in life, life-changing situations, situations that God has saved me in and pulled me through. So people will be inspired, and it will be inspiration for people to know that no matter what you go through, no matter who you are, no matter how, you know, race, color, any of that, you can just keep pushing through and just be yourself. And my story, you know, like I said, come from where I'm coming from, growing up on Josephine, little black gay boy, and now being international and all over the world, that's a blessing. And I'm just, like I said, so thankful and so grateful to be able to have a story to be able to share with the readers and somebody that can actually get something out of my story.
Well, this book is like a descendant of Satchmo, My Life in New Orleans. These are such important records for us to have of the musical culture here.
Most definitely.
And just great, great stories, of course.
Yes.
So, now I have to say, I do love it when you offer to give Miley Cyrus twerking lessons.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That offer still stands.
It still stands, Miley. Still stands, girl.
And then at the back of the book, it's like a graphic novel because you have like the 10 moves, the 10 twerking moves.
Yes.
So it's a good thing this is radio. That's all I can say. So what's next for you? I know you've been traveling a lot to gay pride celebrations all around the country.
Yes. Right now it's pride season. So I'm bringing happiness to a lot of people at the different prides. I'm actually getting ready to come out with a new album.
Yay.
That's going to be linked with the book as well as a tour. So a lot of things is about to happen. I have a miniature book tour coming up as well. So this is really exciting. It's just whatever comes, I take it one day at a time and just keep on knocking and pushing things down.
Yeah.
And God just keep blessing with me with so many ventures.
Well, it's lucky that readers will have a chance to read about those adventures. We've been talking with Big Frida, whose new book is Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva, written with Nicole Ballin. You can meet Big Frida Saturday, July 10th at 6 at Octavia Books. Frida, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate all of the love.
Gay Lenhart is an artist who works in many media. She does book sculptures, guerrilla art, artist books, assemblage, photography, and digital art. For one of her recent projects, she turned to a manuscript by her grandmother, the New Orleans artist Olive Lenhart. The resulting book is Shaking Up Prohibition in New Orleans, Authentic Vintage Cocktails from A to Z. Gay, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much.
Now, your grandmother was a wonderful New Orleans artist who was associated with the Double Dealer, and I was fascinated to learn that you only met her once. What do you remember about her?
Well, she had come north where my family lived in New York when I was a small child. I don't remember when I was three, you know. So she came to visit when I was around 11, and we were living in Long Island. And what I remember about her was two things. I had, at the time, as a child, used to play in a fort in the woods, pretty commonplace. And she wanted to actually come out and see it as opposed to just talk about it. And she came out in her skirt and stockings and got tangled up in the briars and was totally game for whatever was happening.
And then later, you got to know her through her work in a really unusual way after you set it aside for some time. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's been really an amazing adventure following her life and how her life intersects with many other people's lives, because she knew an awful lot of interesting people. So it's been a combination of I'm writing a biography of her and I'm using the source materials of her letters and journals and material letters to her, etc. And I've come to know the art scene in New Orleans of the 20s and 30s and 40s pretty well through all the people she knew.
And she was at the very center of that scene. So tell us about some of the people she knew.
Well, you know, an odd thing about them is they all seem to have quite disappeared from history for the most part, with a few exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So she was really good friends with Charles Bean, who was the director of the Arts and Crafts Club for a decade, Weeks Hall, obviously Lyle Saxon, and the literary group, Rourke Bradford. And, you know, a bunch of those people, if you try to look something up about them, there's very little there, as was true for Olive. She kind of disappeared in history.
But they're such fascinating characters. It's such a shame. So I'm so glad you're doing her biography. And then later, you got to know her through her paintings in a really unusual way after setting them aside for some time. I wonder if you'd tell us about that.
Well, I had her stuff in storage for a great long time. And back around 1980, soon after I got the material, I looked at it a lot. And I fortunately interviewed some people who were alive then and taped them. But then I put the whole project aside in relation to my own life and having my first child. And I came back to it when unfortunately, my basement flooded and her art was down there, and I had to yank it all out in a big hurry and dry it all out.
Oh.
So I had the art, you know, leaning up everywhere until some of it was taken for conservation work. And it's an odd thing to say as an artist, but I've never paid too much attention to oil painting, and getting into Olive's work has made me understand a lot more about that.
And you had it propped up all over your house, just living with it for a while?
Yeah, before I could figure out another way to store it, which I eventually did. I had, you know, 40 oils and three or four portfolios full of drawings. It was a bit much.
It's a huge presence, really.
Yeah.
And then you found the manuscript for Letters from a Shaker, which is now the book Shaking Up Prohibition. And things took off from there in a kind of interesting way.
Well, you know, as soon as I saw the manuscript, I thought, this is amazing, because, well, two things. The art in the book is in different style from almost all the rest of her art. And Olive did the same thing with the drawings for a Double Dealer. She sort of adopted a style and kept to it for the context of that magazine. And she did that with this book. And, you know, it wasn't hard. The book's been 85 years in the making, sitting in a box. And LSU Press said, oh, yeah, let's do it.
Well, describe the book, because it is so charming and unusual, and the layout is so perfect.
Well, what you're looking at is very close to a facsimile. The original manuscript was typewritten with typos, and then there's the pen and ink illustrations, which actually are now up at the Shaw Center in Baton Rouge, the original drawings. So when I describe it to people, you know, I say it's an alphabet cocktail book done during Prohibition. And so far no one said, oh, one of those. I don't think there are any like that, really, you know? And as to why they did it, I think they did it because Prohibition was so ridiculous in their world, and they wanted to make fun of it, which they succeeded in doing.
It was really ridiculous in New Orleans. I mean, and John McGill has written a wonderful essay about that to introduce the book, which I find so charming. But I love the sense of humor. I mean, each wonderful, funny illustration is accompanied by a very witty poem and a recipe or two for drinks. And it's just very funny to read aloud. I can see that you could have an entire party with this book, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think also that, you know, it's good to remember that they were both mothers. And when I was reading about the period, One of the things I ran into was that A.A. Milne of Winnie the Pooh, etc., he was a bestseller. And their writing reads a lot like his writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same style of making up words, puns, etc.
Very witty. Now, Olive composed this book. She illustrated the book, and her friend Hilda Phelps Hammond wrote the poems. So tell us about these two and their friendship.
The only documentation I have is the original cover, which just said, text Olive and Hilda, drawings by Olive.
Ah.
I have no other records to sort of get a feel for what they actually, how they did it or whatever, just the manuscript itself. They were both Newcomb women who were mutual friends with Natalie Scott, and Olive had done the covers for some of Natalie Scott's cookbooks, and they knew each other through the Junior League and Country Club and all that sort of thing. And they would have just known each other by virtue of being in the same overlapping world.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I especially love about this book is that it's so witty, it's so funny and full of inside jokes. And I think of Spratling and Faulkner doing Sherwood Anderson and other famous Creoles. But I love that these two women were doing something so funny as well.
Yes, it's kind of like they just had a ball doing it. There's no doubt about it. You can only hypothesize because each drawing has thumbtack holes on the top that at some point they put them up and, I assume, had a party.
Let's hope. Let's hope. Now, when you set about editing it, what was involved in that process for you? Did you have to do lots of research into the period? And did you correct their spelling? Did you research the drawings? What went into this part of it?
It was already there. All I did was the footnotes. And the footnotes were fun in the sense of, you know, I learned things that I didn't know about, like Vivandiers. I didn't know what Vivandiers were until I looked it up. So it was just a little bit of a conversation with the editors at LSU Press about how much footnoting, because it's not a scholarly book. We just wanted to make sure the reader knew the references.
And you must feel a great kinship with her now after living with all this work.
Yes and no. You know, I tell you, it's interesting. The more you get into someone's life, it's just like real life, let's say someone you know was still alive, the more you become aware of what you don't know.
Ah. What would you ask her if you could meet her?
Oh, I would have 100 questions about her family, I think, pretty much. One of the mysteries that I was able to solve that was quite a bit of detective work was following up the story of her father who had deserted his family to run off with a second cousin. And originally the story was that he had shot the girl and himself in a suicide by cop thing with his police officers in Texas.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, really intense stuff. But then I did a lot of research and found out that indeed the three police officers were indicted for murder, and while it went to trial, mistrial, and then again, the autopsy showed he did not. The police officers lied. You know, what else is new, right? So in 1901, that's what was going on. So I'd be very interested to know from Olive why her mother stuck with the story that it was suicide when it wasn't.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, that's something to live with your whole life, right?
Oh, yes. I can't wait for your biography of her now.
Well, thank you. I'm really involved. And I do enjoy reading about all the people that she was friends with. In fact, it's kind of amazing how many of them, you know, have archives. I can go visit Weeks Hall's archives and Lyle Saxon's archives. And she was a good friend of Gore Vidal and all these people when I was men.
Oh, I know. There's nothing like an archive. I mean, to make you feel the presence of a human being, really.
Yeah. And it's fun in a gossipy way, too. You get to read other people's mail. You know?
Right. What will we do in the future with only email? Let's hope people are saving it somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, talk about your work as a book artist. You do some really interesting and beautiful things.
For years I did a lot of book art, and I have a few pieces in a gallery in New York. But mainly recently I've been just doing guerrilla work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm currently working on a faux art auction of litter. I want to make fun of the art auction world and its pompousness. So I guess part of my sense of humor is like all.
Of course. And you did this wonderful thing where you had a figure sitting on a bench.
Yes, that was fun.
I love that. And it's on your website?
Yeah.
At gaylenhart.com, which is really lovely. It was fun to look at your work. And see, you know, I think Olive would enjoy that so much, you know.
Yeah, no, it's really fun doing stuff outside of the world of galleries where you can really interact with the public directly.
And such a sense of humor.
Yeah, I like to have fun with it.
I know. Every woman can identify with another woman who's written a book called My Life in Laundry.
Yes. They done when my children were very young.
We've been talking with Gay Linhart, who's the editor of Shaking Up Prohibition in New Orleans, authentic vintage cocktails from A to Z, by her grandmother, the artist Olive Linhart, and Hilda Phelps Hammond. You could meet Gay July 16th at 6 at the Shaw Center in Baton Rouge, where she discusses her grandmother's work, or at Tales of the Cocktail at the Hotel Monteleone, July 17th at 4 or July 18th at 3. Thanks so much, Gay.
Thank you very much.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The First Tuesday Book Club discusses Margaret Fuller, A New American Life, Tuesday, July 7th at 5:45 at Maple Street Bookshop. Kent Wascom discusses and signs Secessia, Tuesday, July 7th at 6 at Octavia Books. Rachel Emanuel, Ruby Jean Sims, and Charles Vincent will do a reading from Scotlandville, Tuesday, July 7th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Suzanne Palmieri signs The Witch of Bourbon Street, Wednesday, July 8th at 6 at Octavia Books. The Jefferson Parish Library will hold a spelling bee for adults, Wednesday, July 8th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Ronald F. Bourne signs Troutmouth, The Two Careers of Hugh Clegg, Thursday, July 9th and 6th at Garden District Bookshop. Laurelaine McNeil signs the paperback edition of her novel Doll Baby, Thursday, July 9th and 6th at Octavia Books. Writers Maurice Carlos Ruffin and Emily Statt will discuss and read from their new work at 7, Thursday, July 9th at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Today's guest, Big Frida, signs Big Frida, God Save the Queen Diva, Friday, July 10th at 6 at Octavia Books. Poet Mary Emma Dutre Pearson reads poetry in honor of Bastille Day and France, Tuesday, July 14th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Her presentation is titled Imagining Degas and is an homage to the paintings of Edgar Degas. Now, all through the entire month of July, the hunt for the popular children's book character Waldo is on again through Uptown New Orleans. Drop by Octavia Books to pick up a fine Waldo local in New Orleans passport and see how many you can find at various independent local shops. The first 100 Waldo seekers who get their passports stamped at 10 or more sites can enter for prizes, and there will be a special Waldo party July 31st at 5:30 at Octavia Books. Mark your calendar for Tales of the Cocktail, which will be along July 15th through 19th at the Hotel Monteleone and many other French Quarter locations, with a host of mixologists and cocktail creators and historians in town. Check out talesofthecocktail.com for more information. Today's guest, Gay Linhart, appears July 17th at 4 p.m. and July 18th at 3 p.m. to sign Shaking Up Prohibition in New Orleans, authentic vintage cocktails from A to Z. And a big shout out to University of New Orleans English professor Carolyn Hembry, who has won 2 national awards for her forthcoming book of poetry. Hembry's Rigging a Chevy into a Time Machine and Other Ways to Escape a Plague will be published in spring of 2016 by Trio House Press. Neil Shepard selected Hembry's book as the winner of the 2015 Trio Award, an annual award given by Trio House Press for a first or second book of poetry by an emerging poet writing in English and currently living in the U.S. Hembry also won the 2015 Marsh Hawk Press Rochelle Ratner Memorial Award, selected by Stephanie Strickland. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.